If you need help getting Social Security disability benefits, then this podcast is for you. Give me 15 minutes and I'll pull back the curtain on disability and reveal the secrets to winning I've learned over the past 25 plus years. Hi, I'm Jonathan Ginsberg, and I'm a practicing Social Security disability lawyer. I want to help deserving claimants just like you win the benefits you deserve and not one penny less. Now, if you already know you need help today, go to ssdanswers.com for a free and confidential evaluation of your case. It takes just 2 minutes. That's ssdanswers.com, and I'd love to hear from you. Now, let's start the show. Today, I have a very special guest. His name is Greg Brinkley, and he's a longtime Social Security employee handling disability matters. Greg worked for Social Security for over 25 years, and he served the agency in multiple roles. He worked as a disability claims analyst, a technical expert, a fraud examiner, and a team leader. He has extensive knowledge about the inner workings at Social Security. In part one of our interview, Greg and I discuss how the disability process works from the perspective of a disability claims examiner or an adjudicator. Who are these claims examiners and why are they so busy? What are they looking for? And why does the process take so long? Next month, I'll release part two of my interview with Greg, and we'll talk about fraud investigations, which is another area of Greg's experience. So without further introduction, let's talk to former Social Security Disability Claims Specialist, Greg Brinkley. Today, I'm going to welcome Greg Brinkley to the podcast. Greg formerly worked for Social Security. He's going to tell us what he did. And I think you've got some interesting insight as to, in particular, issues of fraud, which I get a lot of questions about, and also kind of the process of disability from an insider. So, Greg, welcome to the podcast. We're going to do this by video and audio. I appreciate your time. I guess we'll start. Tell me a little bit about your background, about your history, what you did for Social Security, and a little bit what you're doing now.
Thanks, Jonathan. Thank you for inviting me to the podcast. I really appreciate and I'm grateful for the opportunity. I started with Social Security on the state level. I was at the Oakland DDS, the Disability Determination Service. I actually started in the mailroom, not handling the mail, if that's even possible. So, but it was possible for me. A long time ago. So I was actually opening mail pouches of incoming disability claims folders from the field offices and then shipping them back out to the field offices when the decisions were done. So I worked my way up. I became an intake closure specialist. I then moved into support staff, assisting the analysts, the disability examiners with their workloads. Then I was able to become a disability evaluation analyst. One of the examiners at the entry level, moved to the senior level at some point in time. And after many years of that work, I transitioned over to what's called CDI, Cooperative Disability Investigations, dealing with disability fraud for Social Security. And once I worked there for about 4 years, I moved to the federal side, where I was at the regional office in Richmond, California. And I was an analyst and then became a team leader, then became the senior team leader and one of the technical experts there. And then about halfway through my time there, our unit, the team that I was on, became the San Francisco Fraud Prevention Unit, of which there are only three in the nation. And we focused our attention on more class action suits involving disability, depending upon the region. And we collaborated a lot with the other two offices in Kansas City and New York. And in some cases, we got involved in some other pursuits related to disability and investigations, often pairing with OIG, the Office of Inspector General. So from there, I transitioned and moved to Austin, Texas, and started working in the Social Security field office there for 2 years. Now I'm a disability consultant and coach. the Disability Yoda, and I assist people in navigating through the actual application process for Social Security disability insurance.
Okay. Well, it's quite a career, quite impressive for somebody starting the mailroom. That's pretty awesome. Yeah. That is pretty
absolutely.
You know, actually, one thing, this is kind of a little bit of an aside from what we're going to talk about mostly, but you mentioned the field office. I just want to make sure that I understand, because I didn't work there. You mentioned you have a field office, and you also have, I guess, the adjudicators, the examiners. Tell me kind of how that works. I mean, you have a field office, let's say in Austin or in Oakland or in Atlanta. Are there people there that some of them, they have different functions, I'm guessing. Can you kind of give me a little bit of a breakdown of the functions that the people have in a field office?
Sure. In the field offices, they focus their attention on taking the applications and helping people navigate the application process. They determine eligibility for various programs, retirement, survivors, insurance, disability, and other types of claims that people apply for. And also they get it to the post-entitlement side in some cases. If someone has already been on benefits, they determine whether this person is actually eligible to stay on. And then there's some other things that they handle, Medicare claims. They may handle, in some cases, Medi-Cal benefits. And then the usual things, if you go to the Social Security office, people are trying to get a Social Security card. So, and there's some other things that they get involved with that have a lot of bearing on people's and being able to function in our society in America, you know, the immigration status and marriage certificates and name changes. They handle a lot of those processes.
I guess, you know, when you read in some of the blogs and some of the information that comes out of that, it takes a year to 2 years to get somebody trained. That's, I guess, really the reason why. I mean, they've got a lot of things they've got to do. And I'm assuming that you have some people that specialize in certain things, but it seems like you've got to be kind of a jack of all trades working for Social Security.
To some degree, yes. Typically, a field office is split up into the Title II side, which is focusing on retirement, survivors, and disability insurance. And then there is an SSI side, the Title 16 side, to focus on people who have limited to no income. So there are some who operate on both ends, but usually they're pretty specialized. So if someone, like when I was at the field office, I focused on the Title II side. So retirement claims were what I was processing more. And then I was also providing a lot of insight and counsel on the disability process. Since I had such a vast knowledge of the program, I became a great asset to people in the office who have never worked on a Social Security claim on the medical side.
All right. And I guess, I mean, these, you know, I know there's been a lot of talk, and I'll kind of end it with this question, a lot of talk about telework and people that are, you know, Social Security, there's been a lot of controversy. I know there was a big, just yesterday, we're recording this in July of 23. I think just yesterday, there was a union, a deal with the union, and it really didn't talk about the telework. What's your take on telework for Social Security employees?
It's an interesting take. Because I began to telework when I was working in the regional office way before COVID, the pandemic hit, and the concern that a lot of supervisors and those in the front office were concerned with was, are these people actually going to be working when they're home? And in anything, there's going to be people who are going to circumvent the process and try to use it for their own gain. But there were a lot of people who actually were working legitimately. And I noticed because I was, as a team leader, responsible for reviewing cases, doing inline reviews before cases were decided. So I was able to figure out whether a person was actually putting in the effort on the case in comparison to what it would be like if they were actually in the office. So It's it's been a very contentious issue for a better part of a decade. And in our post-pandemic world, there's becoming an increasing need for that. I think that the mechanisms are there in general to make sure that people are going to be working when they are at home. So I think that it should give some people comfort that people, those who are working for Social Security and teleworking in general, are wanting to continue to do the job that they're doing, where they had they would had they be in office.
Got it. Got it. And one last question about the sort of the administrative level before we get into the fraud questions. I see from my end, these cases can take, well, let's start with this. 5, 7 years ago, an initial application would take 3 to 5 months. Now it's 9 to 12 months. Recon, 3 or 4 months. Now 9 to 12 months. Why is it taking so long? Number one. Number two, why is there such a variation depending on where the geographic area? What is going on at Social Security that these cases are taking? And obviously people are suffering. I mean, you're talking about someone who is, can't work, they're disabled, and they're going to wait 2, 2.5 years before they get in front of the judge. Why is it taking so long at the administrative level?
That's an excellent question. The Washington Post actually did an article back in
Oh, yeah.
December of last year.
Yeah, a
I'm
lot of
sure you saw
articles.
that one.
Yeah, a bunch of
Yeah.
Lisa Ryan
Oh,
at the
yeah.
Washington Post. I mean, she's, to give her credit, I mean, she may not be the most popular person at Social Security, but she's written a number of articles, and I send those to my clients when they want to know why things are taking so long. But yeah, absolutely.
Don't know where to begin? Get my free Secrets to Getting Approved Survival Kit. Inside the kit, I discuss such things as how do you know if you have a case? What to do if you're denied? How to avoid common mistakes, and my ever popular, how to avoid trick questions from the judge. Subscribing is free and easy. Just visit ssdanswers.com and look for the survival kit for instant access. Remember, time is eroding your position every day. Don't delay, act now. That's ssdanswers.com for your free survival kit.
And the article that she did in December really, in my mind, blew the lid off the top of everything, because she talked about how, first of all, the offices are not getting the quality of examiner that they once did. So they're having to train people, and because these salaries are not really commensurate with inflation, a lot of people are decided to leave, even when they are in training. So they have to go through this revolving door of keeping people staffed, and because of the quality of examiner that is coming in, it's taking longer for those cases to process. Another thing, as I alluded to a moment ago about the salaries, the federal government is not really subsidizing the salaries enough on a state level, because the DDSs largely are state run, but federally subsidized. So when the federal government when the government is not seeing the need to increase funding for these DDS offices, then what you'll see is a lot of people saying, hey, I might as well go to the federal side, do the same work, and get paid $20,000 more than what I'm getting on the state level. And that's exactly what happened in California. So that's another layer to it. And then just the volume of cases in that are incoming. People are in the cases, people in those offices are really getting hit hard. The volume is increasing. I think the pandemic served to just accelerate that issue. To your second question as to why certain regions are getting hit harder than most, I'll take Texas, for example, which is where I live. Texas has one DDS, as opposed to California that has 11 DDSs. And I'm not even counting the fact that the regional offices are located in California, Texas. California is the Western regional home headquarters. For Texas, they are the home for the Southern region. So there are those offices working on those claims, but the DDSs do the bulk of that work. And when you have one office in Texas handling the entire state, there's going to be a natural backlog. And it's taking people longer than a year, in some cases, on the initial level to get their case decided. And that's a problem. And Texas is not the only state that's going through that issue. So California may have some backlogs, but the backlogs won't be as heavy as a state such as Texas that only has one office.
I mean, my sense is that, you know, Congress, there's this narrative in Congress that Social Security is riddled with fraud. They won't allocate the money. I mean, is that your sense as well, that just this, it's just a problem of there's not enough resources being allocated to Social Security to pay for the people they need to process the cases? Is that correct? What's your take on that?
I think that's really, I think it's smoke and mirrors, to be honest. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of people who are applying for Social Security disability are honest in their efforts. They're not trying to defraud the government. I think that what we see nowadays is a lot of narratives based on personal experiences, based on what people have heard from others, and based on talking points from those in government to buttress the idea that Social Security disability is a scam, or it's a sham, or it's just a Ponzi scheme. Mm-hmm. And nothing could be further from the truth. There is fraud in government. There's fraud in every type of business.
Right, sure.
Right, government or otherwise. And when you have an entity such as Social Security that is government run, the scrutiny is heightened because now we're talking about tax dollars being involved. But in general, it is a small percentage of cases that are actually coming across as fraudulent, a very small case. And I'm speaking from years of experience on the fraud side and disability.
And I want to get to the fraud in a second, but I promise to do it. One of the questions, you know, these cases are taking 8, 9, 10 months. Is there anything a claimant can do, anything an attorney can do to speed up the process? Or are we simply at the mercy of not enough people, overworked, underpaid adjudicators and field office people?
Well, I want to go back to that article that I mentioned about in the Washington Post. The system is on the brink of disaster, unfortunately. I don't know what can be done for the individual or the attorney who is trying to help someone get on Social Security other than just staying in contact with the DDS to make sure that something's being done. I've worked with individuals who have been waiting for the case to be assigned. The case has been shelved at the DDS, and there's no one assigned on that case, and it's been sitting for months.
Yep.
That tells you right there how dramatic the shift has been from what you're talking about, from waiting 3 to 4 months on average, 3 to 5 months on average, to pushing a year.
Yeah.
And a large part of that time from where I sit is really about just getting a case assigned to an analyst or an examiner. So it's becoming more and more concerning.
And how many cases would a typical analyst have to work on at any one time? I assume you mean analyst adjudicator being kind of synonymous.
Yes.
How many cases would an adjudicator analyst be assigned at any one time?
On average, when I was working in the DDSs, the gold standard was 17 cases a week would be assigned to that person. Fresh cases coming in. So they would get an average of 17 a week of new cases. That's not counting what they are managing in their pending caseload. So it could range anywhere, depending upon the skill and experience of the analyst, it could range anywhere from the low 90s to anywhere over 200 cases.
Wow.
Wow. So on average, I would say somewhere between the 150 to 180 range, you would see an analyst, depending upon what the office is doing to help expedite those claims, based on staffing issues, based on vacations and sick leave, and also attrition rates in those offices. So it can vary, but I would say somewhere between 150 and 180 would be a good idea of what an analyst would have to handle.
And again, that kind of blows me away, because I mean, just to give you an idea, I mean, as an attorney, you know, I have in my office 350 cases, let's say, but I've also got a staff, you know, working on them. And I'm not looking at every single case every day, but that's 180 cases, 150 cases. That is a huge responsibility. I mean, that's a lot of work for one person to sort of try to keep track of. Wow. I had no idea it was that many. Very, very interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Well, that's a wrap for today's episode. Subscribe to this podcast for regular updates at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you found this podcast useful, then please give me a 5-star review, because it helps others see the value of my information. Thank you in advance. For a 100% free and confidential evaluation of your case, visit ssdanswers.com. That's ssdanswers.com. Don't delay. Act now.